Hey.
Good morning. Welcome.
How are we doing?
Good.
We've Wayne the Provocateur.
Ooh. I've been called worse things.
Posted something about Olivia Moultrie on his social media and on our social media. It got a lot of strong opinions. And so let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Hey, for those of you that don't know who Olivia Moultrie is, she is a 15-year-old girl. And I say girl because she's 15. She's only 2 years older than Maya, my daughter. She made the New York Times about 2 years ago as a girl who wanted to turn pro as soon as she was 16. Went and played in Europe, applied her trade in Europe. Now she continually works out with the Portland Fawns, like the number one women's team in the world, one of the number one women's teams in the world. She's 15. I've seen her play. I mean, she's super talented. The fact that she works out with the Fawns on a regular basis. But at 15, her parents have decided to sue the National Women's Soccer League because they won't let her play at 15. There's so many questions about this. Are they right? Are they wrong to not let her play at 15? If she was in another country, would it be okay? Is she ready at 15? I mean, where do you even want to start? When we talk about the pillars emotionally and psychologically, is she ready for that?
I don't believe so. I think the question was posed online, well, there are boys that have done it, and there's precedents for boys that have done it. And one of the ones that comes to mind is Wayne Rooney, on his Everton debut, scoring an absolute banger
against Arsenal,
yeah. But I don't think you can compare Wayne Rooney to other people. Nope. I mean, first of all, he was
a phenomenon.
Pinnacle. He was at the pinnacle for a very long time. And we can't say whether Olivia Moultrie will be or not because she hasn't done it yet, What I would say, though, is Wayne Rooney, physically, just looking at the physical pillar, Wayne Rooney physically was an absolute animal at 16. His neck was wider than his head. He was just an absolute pit bull built specifically for high level performance. You look at Olivia Moultrie, she's very slight, and that's not necessarily a bad thing because there's a lot of kind of very slight players that go on and even in the men's game there's very small players that go on and do great.
Luka Modric, Lionel Messi, both Alexis Sanchez, smaller framed.
Exactly. There are so many players, but I think for a lot of those smaller players, they tend to have that low center of gravity and they tend to be, pretty hard to shift, pretty, I don't want to say stocky, but they're not stick thin
They got a certain build.
Right. And I think, you have to, I mean, at 16 for a boy, you're not even close to finishing growth. But at 15 for a girl, you're not even close to finishing growth either. I would also say the amount of money in the men's game compared to the amount of money that's in the women's game means that, in terms of research and development regarding, the latest science around growth, around maturation, around training, around all of this sort of stuff is stronger in the men's game because they can just throw more money at it. They can afford to hire the best of the best in terms of physios and club doctors and all of that sort of stuff. And I don't know that the women's game and that the Portland Thorns have that level of finance and expertise at their sort of...
Absolutely, yeah. It's
And so to compare the men and the women's game...
is wrong. You can't.
You can't. I mean, it's crazy.
Then you could split hairs and say, split hairs between the men's game, the women's game, between the US and England. If this was England, would there be a Premiership Women's Club? Would there be Chelsea, Man City, Arsenal, whoever, willing to take that risk with her? Just because in Europe, we do take that risk with younger players because hearing, you know, most of the players that play for the women's national team or the men's national team have gone through the certain role of soccer, like high school, club, college, recruited, drafted, professional. Whereas England, if you're good enough, you're old enough. And hence that's Wayne Rooney. And now you're getting players like 14, 15 African lads making their debut in the Scottish Premiership.
Yeah, but that's Scotland though, isn't it?
It's Scotland.
I just, first of all, the cultural difference in education alone, you know, in the UK at 16, you finish school. So Olivia Moultrie could well be training with a first team club and then school's done. She's qualified through school. She then has a choice as well if she goes on to sixth form or college and then on to university. And if she decides, if she opts out of that, then, I mean, that's fine. Here, you don't finish your education until 18. So what, I mean, what does it look like? What does a day in the life look like when you're 15, you're at school, but now you're having to travel all over the country because you're involved in these Portland Thorn games. You're having to train every day because you're not going to get away if you're not training every day. Plus then you've got all of these assignments that you have to do. So what are they going to do? Are they going to kind of slip her a pass? You know, is she going to have to earn it? Is she actually going to get the education out of it? And listen, you know, in the sports world, you're always just a few seconds away from a terrible career-ending injury.
At 15.
So I wouldn't want to take that. I wouldn't want my kid to take that risk. Let's put it that way.
And just think about you. You're actually coaching girls her age. So if you think about your top player in your team or in the last year or so, and I know some of your players, would you want them to say, hey, you're good enough to turn pro right now? And then see it end in one bad tackle. I mean, you know, the physical side of it and then the emotional side of it. I mean, you know, I think she's playing for the academy, obviously, the Fawns Academy. I've seen her train. I mean, she's a phenomenal. I mean, she is a super smart soccer player. She doesn't look too out of place when she's with the Fawns. You know, some of those Fawns players make mistakes in training. She makes mistakes, you know, but how does she, that psychological, oh, I'm in front of 7,000 people and I just missed an open goal. You know, a professional soccer player would like be a bit angry. She might be a little bit upset, a little bit sad. So, you know, when we talk about those pillars we've mentioned in other podcasts, I don't think she's got any of them right now. I don't think she's got the physicality. I don't think she's got the maturity.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the problem is people, I've seen a lot of people have said, well, she's good enough. But it's not about being good enough. The game is in my world, six pillars for a reason. You know, you can't build a house on one foundation. You can't build a house on one pillar. If you're trying to build a player, you've got to make sure all of the pillars are strong, you know. And while technically she may have it, and even tactically she may be way above her peers and, you know, be closer to some of those adults she's playing with, you're talking about a 15-year-old girl, again, who is slight in frame. And this is not her playing, you know, with ladies who are, you know, maybe second tier and who are maybe semi-professional, who are kind of working, you know, day jobs and then doing this kind of like on the side as such. These are 40 fledged professionals who are going to be fitter than she is because they've been training for longer.
World Cup winners, some of them.
Right. You know, they're going to be stronger than she is. You know, she's not going to be able to pick up the ball and just glide away from someone like she does at youth level. She's not going to be able to do that as if she was playing with just like a normal female soccer player. You're playing against the elite. They've got weight on her. So if she manages to get away from a player, they're going to catch her because they're going to be just as fast. They're going to be overly physical. Now, the question for me is Olivia Moultrie physically developed enough to have pressure on her back? So the added weight of somebody else on her trying to make a challenge for the ball, for her to then be able to decelerate, change direction with the added load on her body. And that for me is the real concern, because you get somebody putting you off balance and putting some weight on you and you try to change your slow down and change your direction, knee goes. And once your knee goes, you're never back to 100%. And, you know, some of these injuries can be catastrophic where you can never play again. So I just don't get her parents. I don't understand this drive for her to start playing at, you know, 3 years earlier than
everyone else,
you know.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, in the men's game, in the men's game is different, right? In the men's game.
Sadly, it is. But
yeah. And very specifically comparing Europe, the European men's game to here. At 16, when you sign your schoolboy forms, or some kids do sign kind of pre-contracts or professional contracts, you're earning 20 grand a week in the Premier League as a 16-year-old, you know? So 20 grand a week on a 4-year deal, if you blow out your ACL or whatever and you can't play again, you're paid up. You know, you can then use that money to finance education, to finance whatever else you want. You're not going to get that in the women's level, in the women's game here, especially, you know? And so I just don't, it's not like in 3 years, she's going to lose out on millions and millions of dollars.
No.
You know, she's a Nike-sponsored player. That's not going to change whether she plays NWSL or not.
Yep.
You know, you could argue if she plays, her endorsements could go up. Speculation. You know, why are we so desperate to stop this kid from being a kid and throw them into an adult world for little financial benefit? I just, you know, and then you're talking about pillars, you know, when you talk about the emotional pillar, I mean, you know, whether you like it or not, she's going to be in the locker room. She's going to be in training around adults who are going to have adult conversation, you know, is it right for a 15-year-old to be privy to those conversations? And then you could say, yeah, but, you know, locker room talk shouldn't be allowed. And it's a thing in society that's abhorrent, and, you know, and that's fair enough. The fact is, you know, we can't live in an ideal world when we're talking about the health and safety of a child. The fact is, it is going to go on. It does go on. Should she be privy to that? That's the first thing. Second of all, is it fair for those adults to have to watch what they're saying and not be themselves?
Yep.
Because
that whole
because
team environment,
a kid, you know,
we've talked about this, you know, creating a culture or environment. Now, some of these pros are World Cup winners. They're Olympic gold medal winners. And now they not dumb down their conversation, but they're going to have to change the tone of their attitude in the change room because, hey, there's a minor.
Right.
In the changing room.
How does that affect coaching staff? If it's male coaching staff, how does it affect them going into changing rooms where there's a minor in their changing? Does she then have to go to the toilet to change while everybody else is changing in the locker room? Like, there are so many dynamics involved that to sit down and go through all of these things and make sure that they're all boxed off, it's just not worth it.
Because everyone is going to have an A, B, or C answer. One of my queries is that I don't know how often she's practicing with the Fawns right now, the Portland Fawns, but when she walks into that locker room today, knowing that her parents are pushing for her to become a pro, there's probably 99% of that Fawns locker room, they're like, she's not good enough right now. She's a minor. She's a kid. But how does that attitude, like, well, your mum and dad are going to ruin NSWL. There's hardly any money in it as it is. And now it also opens the door for loads of other pushy parents say, hey, my kid's good enough.
Right. Yeah. I raised that point yesterday. You know, the precedent that it sets is, you know, listen, I don't care how good you are at 15. There's a better 14-year-old somewhere. And that 14-year-old, there's a better 13-year-old. And when I say better, I don't necessarily mean better than you at 14, a 13-year-old better than you at 14. I'm saying there's a 13-year-old that is better than you were at 13. So for Olivia Moultrie, who's been a phenom for a few years, there's a 12-year-old out there somewhere that is better than she was at that age. So what does that mean? So we let a 15-year-old into the NWSL, and the next year, what's to stop a 14-year-old from being into the, you know, and then
you're just opening the door. You're opening the door for just mindless information, just mindlessness. It's, I mean, what are the parents thinking? I mean, I've met pushy parents. We all have as coaches, you know, it's not like, you know, my daughter Maya is 13 this week. And she climbs within her own level. She's climbing. She's a rock climber. She's a competitive climber. she climbs with 12 to 15 year olds. And that's her group. That's her youth group. That is how the US climbing. But like, why is it? I mean, I've seen her play. I've seen Olivia Mutra play. I've seen the girls that she plays with because I know them through our jobs. None. I mean, what's to stop one of them girls turn around and say, well, she can do it and she's in my team. Mum, dad, get a lawyer. We're going to court. And it just, whether it's the US, whether it's women's, whether it's men's, it's just going to open up the door for just some mindless, stupid parents. I want my daughter in it. And we both know who those parents are. Let's just open the door. Because if she can do it, why can't we? And it's like, well, it's a little bit different. She's a bit of a phenomenon, but she's still a minor in my case. All I can see about her now is a OM, Olivia, minor. It's just the physicality side of it, the emotional side of it, the culture.
You've got, when you've got very little life experience behind you, how do you deal with an injury setback? How do you do? And you know, yeah, she's gonna have support around her, and you know, and that's fine. But how is she gonna deal with that? How is she gonna deal with missing an open goal on a field
in front of 10,000-15,000 people,
and the team loses a game? You know, how is she gonna deal with a bad patch of form? Where she's not able to kind of, you know, show what she can showcase herself, especially early in her career. She gets on the field and she gives the ball away and she gives the ball away. She gives away a penalty. She, you know, no assists, no goals for the first 20 games. You know, how is she going to deal with that? And, you know, it's all well and good saying that she's going to have the support around her and people around her, but ultimately it's business. You know, when you're at the professional level of the game, this isn't the environment where we can say, oh, well, you know, better luck next time. There's money riding on these things, you know? And so are people going to be as patient with her as, you know, as if she went through the college, the first year of a college
path, yeah, the college path,
you know? She doesn't even have to do the whole thing, but at least play one season at college, that's a good introduction to the professional world. Again, the argument's going to be, well, she's already been thrown into the professional world.
Yeah.
Being thrown into it doesn't mean you're ready for it.
This like scenario. So she gets away. Her parents get away. And her first game is against, you know, one of the greatest female soccer players in the world, Marta. Marta's not going to say, I'm going to take it easy on you because you're only 15. Marta's going to slide tackle in, win the ball, leave a line on the floor.
Yeah.
And then her parents can be like, protect him. Like, no, it's professional soccer.
And why wouldn't you? Like, why wouldn't you? The game is about strategy. Okay. And strategy, in my opinion, is about working out what your opponent's weaknesses are and exploiting them through your strength.
Whether it's physical or emotional.
If you've got a tank in midfield or a tank of a fullback that can get stuck into her in the first 5 minutes. Why would you not tell her to do that? It'd be first 5 minutes, go on, show what the adult game's about. And I know this because when I was very young, I played against adults and got kicked all over the place.
Yeah, welcome to the world.
You know, I think it's a terrible idea. You know, I won't go as far as to say there are people there that aren't looking out for her best interests. Because I think that's just disrespectful. It's a disrespectful thing to say. You know, people like Parsons at the club, and I'm sure all of the players at the Thorns are very supportive of her and are doing everything they can to kind of get her up to speed and up to the level and that sort of thing. So to say that it's a PR stunt, to say that it's being done for any other reason other than, you know, they feel like she's a good player, would be disrespectful. I just think when you look at it and when you weigh it up, there's just too much that you have to cross off and check off to be allowed to allow her to be able to play. It's unprecedented.
I think this is one of the rumors I heard in the last couple of weeks that the Professional Soccer League over here, they're trying really hard to introduce, like the Timbers have a U23 league, the USL, And there's a couple of like kind of amateur women's soccer leagues that exist. And she'd be better off in there because she's playing against some really good college level players. Girls in her position are like, I'm going to risk not going to college, going down that college path. I'm going to dive straight into kind of semi-pro, pro soccer. And there's just not that option for her. It's like, just wait your time, which she should because she's 15. Just wait, get your education, something to fall back on. Just
be a kid.
Just be a 15-year-old kid, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe there's this this professional soccer league, like B reserve team coming up, which I would have no problem playing in that. If she does fine and she settles down and she finds her feet, fantastic. Great for women's soccer. Letting people know that, hey, there's another path right now. It's a bit quicker. It's, you know, it's not this, it's not that. But I just think, you know, pushy parents do not help this. And this could have a really negative effect on women's soccer, which is always going to be a little bit poorer than the men's league, or much poorer than the men's league, no matter where you are, Europe or America. And something like this is just going to rock the boat and just make it very unstable for a couple of years.
Yeah. And when you say poorer, I should just stress that you mean financially.
Financially. Yeah. 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 It's just, you're just opening floodgates for so many. And, you know, on our podcast, a few people have come back and said, well, you know, down in South America, they let girls play at 14, 15. The podcast had a great lead. There's like some guy put about 55 sentences on there about a list of players, but that's South America, different culture.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. Some of these kids know to be disrespectful, but some of these kids, soccer to them is an outlet. It's a way to escape a life, to earn money for their families. Mm-hmm. It's not like Olivia Mutra's in it for the money. She's in it for the fame, or her parents are possibly in it for the fame and the money.
Yeah. I just think, you know, it'd be like, comparing the Argentinian league would be like me saying somebody playing in League One. In terms of the comparison between the Argentinian league and the
English Championship, you mean?
And the no, I mean League One. Like, so it's like the comparison between the Premier League and League One is the same to the NWSL as the Argentinian league. Yeah. Like, you know, it's light years ahead. And a lot of those players that play for the Argentinian national team, first of all, how often do they get smashed all over the place by the US? Yeah. I mean, that's the first thing. A lot of those players that play in the Argentinian national team play, you know, for big clubs, and they're still getting smashed all over the place. You know, that level, it's just, you know, it's a huge gap. So a 14-year-old playing in Argentina isn't anywhere remotely the same as even an 18-year-old playing in WSL here. You know, and when you, again, you talk about this, this whole idea of prodigy, and we spoke about nature versus nurture before. When you look at prodigy, it doesn't always end well.
Doesn't.
People will always point at the cases that ended well. But that's because you don't know about the multitude of cases that didn't end well.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like that diagram, the iceberg, right? You see this big iceberg, but underneath it is all the problems that come with it. And I always say to, you know, players that I'm working with, you know, don't just look at the glorious stuff. Look at the hard work that goes into it. The working out in the pouring rain, not going to the beach with your friends because you're working out, and doing, and the schoolwork, and, you know, the amount of work that goes on underneath. And like you say, people just look at the shiny, glitzy bit. I mean, if you're Mark Parsons, the head of the Portland Thorns, great coach, great guy, English, obviously. If you walk into that locker room today and you see Olivia sitting there, what do you say to her? Apart from good morning, how you doing? But, you know, what do you say? Just like,
I mean, if you're Mark Parsons, you've got to be careful walking in there if she's in there, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
Well, he has an all-female assistant coaching.
So if they're going in there, fair enough. Yeah. It's a really difficult one. And I'm not trying to say she shouldn't be allowed. That's not my place to say that. I just think, like I said, the problems that it could bring up outweigh her being allowed, you know. And, you know, people will say, well, you know, this is you're not looking at what's the best thing for the player.
And make a picture.
Yeah. I am looking at what's, you know, the best thing for the player. I'm just not looking at it from one point of view where I'm looking at her technical ability. I'm looking at the whole thing. But then you also have to look at the whole kind of football structure and how things are done. And yeah, change. People say, you know, change is never a bad thing. Yeah, sometimes it is.
Yeah.
You know,
that could be a change for the worse. I mean, women's soccer is struggling financially, obviously. In America, it's not, you know, it's not earning as much money as the men's league, which is stupid because the quality sometimes is a lot better. And I just think that it's, like I said earlier, it's just going to open the floodgates for more and more players and parents to say, hey, if she can do it, then so can mine. All of a sudden, you know, we've got 15-year-old girls against World Cup winners.
Yeah. How do you even salary a 15-year-old? And where does child labor come into that? And seriously, there's so many questions. Yeah. I can't see it being a positive thing at all.
If she was 18, would it be a bigger issue?
If she was 18, no, because no. At 18,
legally, she's an adult. She can make that decision.
You're allowed to sign a contract, right? Yeah. So.
She's no Wayne Rooney, but then no one was Wayne Rooney at 17. Wayne Rooney was, you know.
And even if you go through and you look at other prodigies, you know, you look at...
Freddie Adu, who I tried to reach out to.
Freddie Adu, I mean, it just should never have happened.
If we asked him right now, do you regret trying to make that bold move? He'd like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now I don't know what he's doing. I tried to contact him, but he's still involved in soccer somewhere. I think he's like coaching somewhere. And
but he's been all over the place. He was in England. He's been in Portugal. He's been in Sweden. He's been in Scotland as well. He's been everywhere, and he can't get, you know, the contract he needs. And you know, looking at other sports, you look at Tiger Woods. I mean, Tiger Woods started playing from a very young age.
Yeah.
And was on the pro circuit very, very early.
Yeah.
But look at the direction his life took.
Yeah. It happens in other sports. Look at the Williams sisters in tennis. Right.
The Williams sisters have been phenomenal for years.
Pushy dad.
Yeah, pushy dad, absolutely.
Yeah.
But could Olivia Moultrie deal with the amount of scrutiny and negative press Venus and Serena have to deal with?
Yeah. Boris Becker, 17. Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Tennis. Tom Daly, 14, Olympic. Tom Daly is an English high ball diver. He's won like 5 gold medals. You know, but different sports, different backgrounds, different arenas. But still, I mean, the Olympics, some other sports that you look at these, you know, somewhere right now in China or Russia, there's an 11-year-old girl that can do 75 like somersaults standing still in a leotard, and she'll be the next gold medalist. And it's just different sport. And I just, yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, the comparing kind of like the gymnastics and the swimming and that sort of stuff, they've got a very, very short kind of life. Usually a gymnast is done by 17.
15, yeah, 15, you know? 17, yeah. But they've won 4 gold medals by then.
Right. In the Olympics, no less.
Yeah.
You know, which is every 4 years.
They can't spell Olympics, but they won a gold medal. So.
So it's an interesting one. It's going to be interesting to see the way it plays out. From what I read, NWSL has already come back and said the clause that by which the lawyer is trying to make a case doesn't apply. And so they've turned it down again. I guess it's heading to court.
I think it's the best thing for Olivia as a young minor, as a teenage girl, two years older than my daughter.
Just go and be a teenager.
I think it's best. Yeah, I think it's best. Go have boba tea and milkshakes and have some fun. Make a TikTok video or something. And I think it's the best thing for women's professional soccer.
Yeah.
You know, Europe is a very different beast, as we know. Pele won the World Cup at 17, but you know, he was a phenom. It was a different era, different culture, different time.
But even then, if you compare the women's
game, I'm not comparing Pele to Olivia Moultrie.
No, but I'm saying if you compare the women's game in Europe to the women's game in America, do you know of any 15, 16-year-old English girls that are playing Premier League in
no.
You know,
we'd have heard about them.
I don't know any either. And those, you know, the NWSL and the Women's Super League are the two strongest leagues in world football. You could include Germany in that. I'm not sure about how strong the French league is, but the French have, you know, top teams in terms of
European competition. It's probably like the men's league, but it's two really good teams and the rest are just average.
Right. And so in all of that, I haven't heard of a 15 or 16 year old player. No. So, you know, so I just, you know, is this a case of America trying to separate itself from the rest of the world, as it does with no promotion, no relegation, as it does with, you know, salary caps, as it does with, you know, all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Interesting. When I first put it up, like straight away, I think like 75 people voted and they went straight in with no. And then when I looked at the metrics for that, most of the people were soccer parents I know.
Right.
And all of a sudden, after about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, when the younger half of my kind of like followers, when the kids get on, then all of a sudden it started going from no to like 50-50, like these 15-year-old kids saying, yeah, because if she can, then I can. I'm like, no, I've seen you play. It's not possible. Not unless you sign up for more private lessons. But it just opens a floodgate for just some stupid parents and some dangerous, not life-threatening, but just some injuries that could just stop you playing sport again at 15.
Yeah. Yeah, but then you also, you know, you also get people that will exploit these young players as well, you know, agents and that kind of stuff that come out that would work. And it just, I can't see anything good coming from it. I can't.
One more topic for you to think about. You're a club soccer coach. I'm a club soccer coach. It's tryout season. Mine start tonight. Mm-hmm. Players coming in, players going out. What are your top five tips for any age group for a player to think about trying out at their new club or an existing club or a new club? Top five tips.
This is tips for
players. Anyone who's, for players who are trying out.
I think not to be complacent. Okay. Is the first one. It doesn't matter about your reputation.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter about what you've done in the previous season, because you're going into tryouts, you just kind of never know. You just never know who is going to be coming to try out. And again,
treat it like a usual training session.
There's so many dynamics involved. You know, is there a new coach? How many new players are there going to be coming? What is your sort of rank within the team? You know, if it's a team of 18 and you're kind of ranked around about kind of 14, 15 and six brand new great players come in, what does that mean for you? You know? And so just complacency, do not be complacent whatsoever. Go in, work hard.
Don't rest on your laurels.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of those players could be your competitor.
Yeah,
absolutely. So, okay, tip number two.
So something I always tell players, especially when I do like the ODP tryouts and that kind of thing, is play your game. Don't do what you think I want to see. You don't know what I want to see. Play your game. Show me what you can do. That's what I'm watching at the moment, you know.
Can you add that to your game philosophy and game mentality as a coach? She's got what we need, and then we'll put her in the false nine. Right. Bang.
Yeah. My job is to basically assess you as a player.
Yep.
I'm going to look at you using the pillars.
Yep.
And for players listening, when I say pillars, I'm talking about the technical, tactical, psychological, the physical, and then I add two separate, which are good things. Emotional, you know, what's your emotional control like, and then a social pillar.
So
I want to see how you interact with players
that you don't know,
how you interact with players that you do know.
That'd be really hard for players of a certain age. Like I've got much younger girls than what you're coaching right now, but my ODP starts this weekend. You know, it's making sure these girls can interact.
Well, so at the younger ages, I actually think it's actually a lot easier. It's a lot easier to develop cohesion in the younger kids if you can be silly. If you can be silly and you can get the players to understand when it's a good time to be silly.
And they can understand their accent, be the first thing.
Yeah.
He's from Australia.
I don't have an accent. They've got an accent.
Exactly.
Then yeah, you know, they can basically, they'll vibe with each other and they'll be silly and they'll all be into the same kind of thing. It's when you get older, you know, the kids are getting older and
they have different
lifestyles. They start to pay a little bit more attention to what's cool and what's not cool. And you can go in, you know, 100 different directions on fashion and on, you know, all that sort of stuff.
They're more influenced by outside influences rather than my age group is.
Like,
my group just care about, you know, My Little Pony and matching ribbons and, you know, scrimmaging. Whereas your girls are a bit more concerned about other stuff going on.
Be you, basically. So a third thing for people that are considering or going into tryouts and, you know, maybe considering playing at a different level, maybe looking at a different club or that kind of thing, is to think about your training environment and your development environment first. You know,
trophy, because my dad says and we all know those players. So.
Yeah, it's just crazy to me. You know, basically, when you go to talk to a new coach, you want to first of all, you know, understand the coach, and so there needs to be a conversation with the coach. What kind of coach are you?
Yeah,
you know, great, you've won the last 4 state cups. But what's your turnover in your team been like? You know, have you basically just taken
Do you just keep playing 18? The long ball over and over again?
Do you just keep playing the best 18 at every tryouts, even if that means that you cut 6 every year? Do you have a style of play that involves someone in your position?
That's a really good point. You know, I'm a attacking 9. I'm a good 9. I can play the false 9. Oh, that's okay. We play 4-5-1, so I don't need you kind of thing.
Right. Or, you know, are you a centre midfielder, a ball playing centre midfielder, and we look to get in behind as quickly as possible. So we go a bit more long ball. If you ask a coach these questions and
he's going to like you a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. But from the player's point of view, if you ask these questions and the coach can't answer these questions for you, there needs to be alarm bells. You know, what's your philosophy? Like, as the coach, you specifically, what's your philosophy? You know, can you break down for me the style of play in the 4 phases? You know, these are things that you need to ask and you need to know. You know, good coaches will be able to answer these questions. Good coaches will be able to tell you, based on your tryout, this is what I've seen. This is how I think you'll fit into this system. You know, and then you want to sort of find out. Yeah, they've won loads of stuff, but do they develop players? Again, if there's lots of turnover.
Long-term, short goal, risk and reward. The reward is winning loads of gold trophies and having ribbons on the end of your bed. The risk is not making college.
The risk is potentially getting cut next year.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a ready-made new product that's available for somebody to just snap up and put into their team, you know?
Losing your passion because you're not playing.
Right.
Losing interest.
Yeah.
Falling out.
I mean, even the way the coach communicates, you know, he could be, it could be a very successful team and you could be getting lots of time, but if it's a coach that's going to break you down verbally, then, those kind of things are really, I find to be more important than anything. So what is your development environment or what is the development environment?
Okay. Tip number four.
Usually the tryouts are kind of are back to back, so
and staggered.
I'm gonna say nutrition, pre-game and post-game nutrition.
Yeah,
hugely important. Make sure you take on enough glycogen, and this is more so in kind of the older
high schoolish age. Yeah. What's a couple of food drink items they can get that in?
So something where you can get a lot of glycogen would be your kind of pastas, that kind of stuff.
There you go.
You can also use sports drinks for that. But I would probably do the sports drink thing for after. And you don't have to buy I don't even know the ounces. I don't pay attention.
It's 16 or 32 ounces. They come in these days.
You need to buy the big monster. Just one of the tiny little, is enough.
Just literally like a cup and a half.
Yeah. So pre-game, make sure sort of 3 hours before you've eaten something that's high in carbohydrates, but not something that releases carbohydrates quickly. So you want something high glycemic index.
Yeah, one of my things is rest.
Absolutely.
Yeah, rest would be really important on one of those. I've got 3 or 4 players right now that are trying out for like ECNL and Elite Academy kind of stuff. I've just told them, go to bed early, hydrate, get a nice meal inside you, put your phone away. You don't need to be making TikTok videos till 2 o'clock in the morning the night before a big tryout, like the biggest tryout of your young sort of path so far. So plenty of rest, good nutrition are two of the most important things I think a lot of people don't care about sometimes. Work hard, get your touches in, score a goal. It's like, no, it's not always about that.
I would say if I was going to add number five,
have fun.
Key number five would be prepare your mind. I come from a different culture in terms of, it meant a lot more, which might sound harsh, but when I was 13 and 14, I'm going out to play in these competitions, these London Cups and that kind of thing. And you've always got scouts floating about and, absolutely, clubs looking at you and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And so you're basically playing because the end goal in your mind is, I want a professional contract. And this is like 90% of the boys. I'm happy to see an increasing percentage of girls in England. When you ask them, what do you want to be? It's a footballer. So when I would go into a game, my journey to the game was mindset. Now start getting mind on, start thinking of your game, doing, imagery, little mental imagery things.
Visualization is a cue.
When I get that chance, I'm going to make sure, and you're going through it in your mind, how you're going to stroke the ball and everything. And
absolutely. Visualize, like you say, performance mindset, just getting into that point where it's like, I'm going to have a great training session. If it goes wrong, I got to lift my head. I got one of the pillars is emotional. What happens when you lose the ball? Do you drop your head and give up? Or do you?
Right. And you go through
scenarios,
go through all of these scenarios and you'll start to sort of prepare yourself and get yourself into the mind frame that you need to be in to go in and do business. Because ultimately, whether you're new to a club, whether you're at an existing club, and you might be going into it with your friends and that kind of thing, everybody's coming there to compete. Everybody's coming there to compete for a place. You might have your top sort of 3 or 4 players in a group, but the chances are, if you are the pinnacle of the age group, they're probably going to be looking at going somewhere else as well. So now that next group, you're basically playing to be one of the top players in that group, which means then when you go down to that next team, the top part of that group are going to be competing to come up into that group. And so everybody's competing. So you can't afford to turn up and not be in the right frame of mind to go and compete.
And that starts with, like, say the build up to the game. I'm a big fan of putting on headphones on the school bus, on the team bus, just putting out, all the background noise, all the shouting, all the screaming, all the, we're going to win. And just like listen to something calming. Yeah, just focus, whether it's reading a book or even like when I was, like you say, you went back to when you were like 13, 14, going to one of these big games where you knew there'd be a guy in a sheepskin coat and big gold rings smoking a la-di-da, knowing that he might be in. Yeah. No one really prepared me mentally for some of those big games. Oh, you've got this, son, pat on the back and out the door with me bag and everything. And these days I'm spending a lot of time with my athletes, the people that I've been coaching, saying, are you mentally ready for that? Are you ready for like 3 games in one weekend that we have to win every single one? How do you prepare? I listen to music, I read. I'd say the players now watch as much soccer as you can, which I think is a huge thing in this country. Nobody watches anything. You know, watch players as they get off the bus. Most of them got their headphones on, not because they're listening to music. They could be listening to like some meditation. They're not stressing out about it. You know, I did read somewhere today that a coach in San Diego said, don't stress out. It's just another training session with new players. Yeah, but no, those new players could be better than me. They might force me onto the bench. So, you know, you still have to prepare to give your best. It's a training session. You don't go into training sessions, Alan. I'm only going to give 50 because it's training. I'm going to give my coach, Angelo, and coach Wayne 100 because I want to be on the starting lineup. What I do in practice is going to copy what I do in the game. So if I have a crap practice, I'm going to have a crap soccer game.
Right. And they say you can't just turn it on. It's not a tap. You can't just turn it on and turn it off whenever you feel like it. And then, you know, talking about the grander scheme of things, you know, while we're looking to develop players, we want to develop people. And so one of the things I can never understand is how somebody goes into something without giving 100%. I just thought, what's the point? What's the point? What, like, what is the point? You're going through the motion. You might as well just not go. You might as well just not do it. You know,
unless it's, you know, like you say, you know, as coaches, we always say, go in for a tackle 100% or don't go in at all. You know, then you get that kid that slide tackles in and doesn't get the ball. I gave 100% and you took 100% of the player's ankle out. But, you know, yeah, everything you do, every training session I plan is carefully thought out for what the team needs. My tryout plan, it's taken me 3 days because I want to make sure that these young ladies I'm seeing for the first time, or most of them for the very first time, can receive a ball at pace. Whether their first touch is like, you know, 10 yards in front of them or it's a yard in front of them. I want to see what these young ladies can do with a ball at their feet against a bunch of girls they'd never met before. So, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, tonight my tryout, some of these girls, I've got an older sibling or good parents that say, hey, are you prepared for this up there as well? Because soccer is played, most sports are played up there, soccer more than anything. You've got to be prepared on the way to that tryout. Am I ready for this? Am I in a good position? Did I rest? Did I eat? Et cetera, et cetera. So some good tips.
So if you've enjoyed listening, if you've got anything you'd like to comment on, if you want to get involved with some of the social media stuff that we've been talking about, you can go and check out our Instagram and our Twitter accounts.
Okay.
That are Coaches Coach Pod for Twitter and
Elevate Soccer on Instagram and Coaches Coach Podcast.
Awesome. Cool. Hope you've enjoyed and we'll speak
to you. Thanks very much for listening, guys. If you've got anything to say, just post it. Let us know. Give us some questions. Give us something else to talk about. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Yeah. Bye-bye.